so far. And we had been discussing how to understand exactly the whole question of whether one should take on a Aveira or something similar in order to protect the spiritual welfare of somebody else, Chatei Kedei Sheyizake, and we pose the basic framework of the question as to whether we see why it would be that you would say this is maybe because we perceive everyone as being on the same team, that essentially any gain for God is a win and any lose for God is a loss. Or should we say that it's not necessarily that we're all seen as one team, also true, but that every individual is responsible for every other individual, so they're separate from you, but there's a mitzvah that's involved in taking care of them that's also a cheshbon. And then we started to look at how the two sugyas, the sugya on Daf Dalet and Shabbos, and the sugya on Erevin, as well as some other sugyas, are brought into contrast with each other in the attempt to try to find the yesod. And we discussed basically five principles in the Rishonim, one of which is not really so much about the mechanics of this. It was relevant equally when you're dealing with your own trade-off, and that was the question of if the maisa has already been done. Is it before the Aveira, after the Aveira? That was probably dependent on other considerations. But four that might be relevant to what we're talking about here, either that if you are somehow responsible for what the other guy is doing wrong, then it is your problem, or that a mitzvah derabba or derabim or derabba is somehow different. There's an interesting possibility that we talked about a little bit. Or if you say that if he was poshea, then that's not a justification for you to sin on his behalf. Let's say in our case, if his behalf is tonner, he was the one who did something wrong, so we shouldn't act on his behalf because of his pshia. Or the interesting ritzvah that the distinction is between whether he does it on his own, that's what's going on in the Gemara in Erevin, or we're instructing him, and so our Gemara says, no, we don't. We don't tell him to do this. It's only if he does it on his own. And as we mentioned yesterday, there are at least two ways to understand that, which are very different from each other. One would be that there's no official sanction, so we don't paskin that he should do it, but if he does it, it's defensible. Or, not just that it's defensible, it's totally wonderful. It's a big rishus. But it's a rishus, so we wouldn't order him to. If he's not interested in doing it, we won't tell him he has to do it. But it's certainly a viable option, and maybe one that we would happily credit if he actually did it, but we wouldn't instruct him to do it. So I think the ritva's language is open to those two very different interpretations, both of which are very interesting here. So let's talk for a second more about the idea of him being poshea. That was a little bit of a difficult idea in the Rishonim, right? We said, why should it be that it makes a difference if he was poshea? That should stop me from helping him, right? And we suggested yesterday that that's understandable a little bit more, maybe, if you view everybody as discrete. If you see everybody as part of one team, it's a little bit less understandable because the worse his aveira is, the more we're going to want to stop it, the more we don't want it happening on our team. So from the one team svara, it doesn't seem to apply so much. But from the discrete individual svara, maybe we could hear it, but still we have to figure out why should it matter. Just because he was poshea, we shouldn't care about him? Do we have such a yesod in Hilchos Tzedaka, by the way? Is that the case? Let's say you have somebody, it's easily imaginable, right? You have somebody who's asking for tzedaka, but it's his fault, he doesn't have any money. He's capable of working, and he chooses not to. So I think John's hand went up a millisecond before you.
I don't know if you're actually asking her. Like,
yeah, okay.
I think I heard her shuffling out the name, say you're not, but I'm glad to get some of this.
So that's one possibility.
The mitzvah of helping your enemy with the overladen donkey, apparently, according to some, is that it's only if he's going to help you, meaning he's going to contribute towards his own welfare. But if he's not, and you're just helping him, he's not helping himself.
So there is such an idea. Some of the Rishonim Maseches Ksubis, where some of these sugyas come up. Again, that's a little bit the next year preview. So there is some discussion among the Rishonim to what extent is one either not zochet hitzdaka or somebody lower on the list, perhaps if somebody is a pusheya. So it's interesting, maybe that might have some relevance and maybe not, because it's also a question of degree. We have to figure out exactly how that fits in. Presumably not, although it depends also on how. You know, it may be counterproductive that if you're going to give somebody tzedaka that could be used to help a genuinely needy person, and then it certainly that might be a cheshbon. And part of the responsibility of the nosing tzedaka is to have some type of awareness of this. And it's the whole question whether yotzei the mitzvah tzedaka or not. That's a little bit of a complex discussion. But theoretically, you could see a svara like that crossing over here, right? That maybe there is some type of idea. Listen, if I'm going to lay myself on the line to help you, then I'm going to help you because you deserve it, because you're needy, but not because you're pusheya. Although, you know, this is also a question that comes up for firemen and people who are involved in rescue services. So they're not allowed to be mechalik based on somebody's pshias. Comes up and they have the hurricane, and they have the hurricane. Why does it get noisy sometimes? They have the hurricane, and they tell people to evacuate, and then people don't evacuate. So the rescue service people still go in and risk their lives to save the lives of people who put their own lives in danger and ignore warnings. You know, sometimes they factor in the pshias. Sometimes they don't factor in the pshias. So that's an ongoing discussion. So could you see there being a difference here from that perspective? That here I'm being told, put my life on the line spiritually for this guy. Take an Avera so you can help this guy. So you could say, well, if he doesn't worry about himself, which is an idea you sometimes find both in Hilchos Tzedaka and Hilchos Pikuach Nefesh, that if he's not concerned about his life, how could I be expected to be concerned about his life? But it's interesting, there is another angle from which to look at this. And from this perspective, it actually might flip things. Maybe you would say that the Pshia Svara could factor in another side of the equation. Let's think about it like this for a second. Can you see a Svara where Pshia would make a difference, even if we're just talking about you? Let's say it's just the case of Chadei Kidei Shetiz Ka'atzmacha. Right? Not the case where you're doing it on somebody else's behalf. You're doing it on your own behalf. That maybe we'll say in a given scenario, do a small aveira to save yourself from a big aveira, but not if you were yourself pushay. How would you explain such a svara, if such a svara exists? Let's stipulate for a second that it could exist. So how would you explain that? Are you?
Perhaps if you've already gone down, you've already done it. Pushaya action, so then why add to it by doing this column as well? We've already done the thing that had an effect on you. Let's say we go with the psychological svara of doing of sinning. So then it already had an effect on you. Why add to that?
Okay, that's interesting. As you're basically saying, you already have that this is basically all about balancing. And you find this in other areas of halacha. That this is all about having, since you have to trade off averus for mitzvahs, so big averus for small averus, so maybe not everyone is equal in terms of their right to make such a decision. If you have a clean record till now, then you're allowed to take this risk, but if you have a messier record, I think it's a fascinating svara. I don't think it's shot here, but it's an interesting idea. Any other possibilities? Have you ever had that before?
Yeah, maybe since you already were Moshea, so we're going to make you bite the bullet and you're going to take the punishment or take the carbon, sort of to discourage you from doing it.
It's like a knas kind of thing, or maybe not an active knas, but a lack of schus built into the halacha, that the halacha will allow you to save yourself at its expense, but not if you are not innocent in getting to that point. Which is an interesting svara. It's also not what I'm looking for, but it's also interesting. Definitely has what to be said for it.
I think it might be similar to what was said, but especially with the verses that are very maisa based, let's say from Shabbos. So once you already did the action in a poshea way, you've already established that this is your mindset, so the action's done, so nothing you can do at this point will undo it.
So you're basically, so you're basically saying that the question we've mentioned in the past of whether the aveira is over or not, so maybe it shifts from different actions, that if you don't have so much involvement in making it happen relatively on automatic, so then maybe we'll define it based on the end. But if you did a pshia at the beginning, so then it'll be defined from that point, and then the conclusion is that you can't fix that part.
So the pshia mindset.
All three of these svaras are fascinating. None of them is what I was looking for, but they're all very interesting. I think they all have elements to them, but they all have what to say, but there's still something more. Hi.
What about what Tosfos mentioned about something happening in Mamela, something that got started by him?
So that's closer to what Jonathan is saying, although a little bit less complicated. You're saying that if you have an Avera in general that just happens in Mamela, so then you might say don't get involved when you don't have to actively. But here when Tosfos talked about Mamela, it means what's left is Mamela, but what you did was still the initial Maisa. So there is an approach you find in some Tosfos, and actually I don't remember if it's any of the Tosfos and they put on the Marma Komos. But what if you think about this in a totally different way? Now we know that we sometimes have a principle in Halacha called Asei Dolchalos Asei. Right? So what does Asei Dolchalos Asei mean and what does it entail? Basically it means that sometimes we find ourselves in a clash. That we have a conflict, it's mutually exclusive. We have a positive mitzvah to do, and that's going to require us to violate a negative mitzvah. So the rule actually is, asei dochalos asei. The rule very narrowly applied, because there are tons of exceptions, we'll mention them in a second. But the rule theoretically, abstractly, if anyone was learning Yivamas here 2 years ago, so this is the first part of Yivamas, so that, by the way, throws into question a little bit we were talking about earlier in the sugya, and the Achronim tried to explain it, that on the one hand, he said kumbi asei is more chomer than sheva al tase, working off the assumption that it's a bigger avera to violate a los asei than to not do a mitzvah asei. A sin of commission is considered worse halachically than a sin of omission. So then the question is, how do you make these two principles fit? That on the one hand, we prioritize the assay over the los assay, but we say that it's a worse avera to do a los assay than to skip an assay. They sound like they're in contradiction to each other a little bit. That's a separate discussion for learning assay to the los assay. We'll talk about that a little bit more. But the point being that there are times in halacha where we have a mechanism to deal with the clash. We have to make a trade-off. So asei dochalos asei, if you think about it, it has something in common with the sugi. It's about, you have a conflict between two halachic priorities that are mutually exclusive. So which one is going to win? Just like here, so you have the halachic priority of stopping the vigil, but you also have the halachic priority of not doing revia sapas. So which one is more important in the eyes of halacha? So it's very similar to the question of asei dochalos asei in that principle. Now, when it comes to asei dochalos asei, so you have certain restrictions. And one of them is, for example, that it has to be be'idna, that the two have to come up at the same time. That it needs to be that you are fulfilling the mitzvah asei as you are violating the los asei. And, equally importantly, it has to be e'efshir l'kayim shneihem. Right, that it's not possible for you to do this somewhere where you can accommodate both. It's a genuine conflict and mutually exclusive. So then, all right, you're legitimate in trading off the los asei to accomplish the asei. But if it's efshar l'kayim shneihem, so then you don't have that right. Now the parallel here would be that if you have no choice, there is an inherent conflict here. So then, the mechanisms of halacha say, all right, so then you have to pick the most important priority and sacrifice the other one. But if it's efshar l'kayim shneihem, or as some of the Rishonim say, if you were a poshe in this conflict didn't have to be. But because you were neglectful, so you have this conflict. Right? So then, that's on your cheshbon. That the halacha is not going to bend its rules to accomplish your pshia, to accommodate your pshia. It'll bend its rules because they're inherently contradictory. If the system is that the two rules are in mutual conflict with each other, okay, so then the halacha has to tell you, how do you decide which one comes first? But if it's not that there is an inherent problem, it's your fault there's a problem. Right? You have a conflict between two responsibilities because you waited till the last minute. So now they're in conflict with each other, but they weren't inherently in conflict. So then, that would be your problem. So then maybe the poshea factor is not about the other guy doesn't deserve it. It's that the mechanism of halacha doesn't make the same accommodations. So that's true even when thinking about yourself, even before you get involved with anybody else's rachmanis. So it's not necessarily about you having less rachmanis than somebody else who brought about their own problems. It's that even if you were dealing with your own problems, you have fewer tools at your disposal if you were a poshe. So the significance of that is that that allows one to look at the poshe as far and still go back to the one team as far. Right? And basically say that we're all on the same side, that your problems are my problems 100%. But even for myself, I would not have reshus within halacha to compromise for a pshiyah. So too, as much as I take on your problems and as much as we're all on the same team, but unfortunately I don't have the ability to override the din in order to fix a pshiyah. Hi.
So you're saying that hypothetically, according to like the possibility that we're going to be able to take it out. But the Gemara said, you put him in Mesa, you got to take it out. So what does all hypothetically correct, isn't it? Because the case of Gemara is you do Shia.
In that case, you're saying?
Yeah.
Right, unless right, unless you...
And the Gemara said, you take it out. So what does all like...
Right, unless Mezid is actually different than Pshia, because Mezid you could have tshuva for, Pshia might be more the category of shogeg, and you might say that the kapara for shogeg is appropriate even for a poshea, while the punishment for Mezid is not appropriate for a poshea. That poshea maybe belongs more in a category with shogeg, and you could say, all right, that person deserves to get the consequences of the shogeg, he doesn't deserve to get the consequences of the Mezid. Maybe. It's theoretically possible. But your point is well taken nonetheless. So this is all interesting in terms of how that comes out. So there is a very nice discussion about this whole topic in the Sefer Knesset Avram, the Knesset Avram of the Shiurim of Avram Farbshin, who's Rashi of Chevron. So he points out, and we alluded to this a little bit yesterday, but specifically in the context of this point, he says that if we are talking about allowing somebody to sin, to be mezakeh his friend, so he's going to choose this action over the otherwise preferable halachic route. There's two ways to explain this, like we said a little bit yesterday. You could say that it's simply you have two mitzvahs in front of you, so which one do you prefer? Right? Do you prefer the mitzvah of observing Radia Sapas, or do you prefer the mitzvah of helping your friend do... helping your friend save himself from achatas, let's say. Or as we'll see, and if you saw some of the Mar Makomos today and yesterday, you could have the question more straight up in terms of mitzvahs atzei, right? Let's say you have a conflict between your ability to fulfill a mitzvah atzei behidr and your friend's ability to perform mitzvah atzei at all. And to give a little bit of synergy between last semester and this semester, right, if you saw the Mar Makomos discussion, let's say you could light Hanukkah candles behidr, but your friend doesn't have any candles. So you have to choose, should you help him light and fulfill the mitzvah at all? Or should we say that, no, you should prefer your own hiddur mitzvah of lighting all the candles? So a question like that seems to be about preferences. What's a better thing to do? What's a better investment, so to speak? To do my mitzvah perfectly or to help him do his mitzvah, which is also a mitzvah for me? Alternatively, you could say that some of the language that you find in this discussion is about dechiyah. This pushes away this, like essay dochalos essay. So the language of essay dochalos essay, which is not about preferences, but about saying that this is overridden by that, that seems to only make sense when you're dealing on your own cheshbon. So I have my responsibilities, I have a clash. So the clash is, okay, this one is doicha the other one. And that whole approach only seems to make sense if you take the same team svara. If you say that we're all on the same side, so therefore I have to take on your issues as my issues. So now I have an internal clash. It's not just a possibility of stepping outside my preferences and helping you, but it's an internal clash. This is also one of my responsibilities. So then we just have to figure out what's more important and how does Pashaya fit into that? How exactly does it play out? There were those who mentioned yesterday the positive concept of Arvus, just to discuss how it's linked. So I added today the discussion of the Rush. If you had a chance to see it, the Rush in Maseches Brachos, the Daf Chaf Mebeis, it's a famous Rush because of other things that he says. But there the Rush discusses the other halachic application of Arvus, which is the less obvious one. You know, in school you always learn in your younger years about the nice idea of Kol Yisrael Arevim Zelazah or Zeh Bazeh, which is a nice idea, no question, but in the younger grades you don't necessarily learn about the very specific halachic application that it has. In the realm of Shemei Ka'oneh, right? Arvus is not the same thing as Shemei Ka'oneh. It's a detail within Shemei Ka'oneh. That because of Shemei Ka'oneh, if I make a bracha on your behalf, so then you can be Yotzei through listening to my bracha. That's Shemei Ka'oneh. But one of the details of Shemei Ka'oneh is that for me to be Motzi you, I have to be Chayiv. I have to be obligated. If you're obligated and I'm not, or you're more obligated than I am, you're obligated to Raisa and I'm obligated to Rabbana, so then it doesn't work. I can't be Motzi. However, you might say, all right, so how does it ever work that somebody goes to shul Rosh Hashanah morning and then he goes to the nursing home and he blows shofar for the people there? Or he reads Megillah for the people there on Purim? Right? If he has to be mechuyev, he has to be obligated. So this guy isn't obligated. He went to shul already. He heard the shofar blown. He heard the Megillah read. So you can't, he's not obligated to do that twice. Not obligated to read the Megillah twice Purim morning. So why don't we say he's not mechuyev bedavar? If you have to be obligated, this guy's not obligated because he already was in fulfillment. Question about that?
It could be that intentions to not be fulfilled. The first time he could have been
gone. Maybe, but then that would be a whole different issue. But we actually don't require that. That even if he was Yotzei in shul, we still let him do it again. So the Gemara explains why. The Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that that's the principle of Arvus. That sins call Yisrael Arevim Zelazah. So, or Zeh Bazeh. So therefore, even though I am not technically mechuyev to do it twice, on some level I am. On some level, if there are other Jews who need me, and I haven't done it, they haven't done it yet, that keeps my chiyuv alive. So if I'm technically chayev, I'm somebody who's normally chayev. So then we don't say that just because I've done it already, I am out of the picture. I'm still in the picture because your need keeps me alive. Hi. So if roi means technically chayiv, I guess that's the sense you're using it. That if you're somebody who's normally chayiv, but right now you're not obligated to do it an additional time, that's still called chayiv. You're still obligated. Why?
Within the realm of...
Right. You're somebody who's normally classified as a mechuyev bedavar. This comes up in Hilchos Purim in some interesting ways. We'll talk about that a little bit more to get closer to Purim. But this is a basic principle of Arvus. So if you look at that Rush, the Rush and Brachas Nafchaf Mideis, where he says other things that are controversial and provoke a whole discussion, but you could talk about that separately. If you saw the Rush, you could just deal with it. But the Rush there says that in talking about this principle of Arvus, he has a language, what does he say, that's significant for our sugya specifically? Looking out, and he uses two crucial words. Lahatzil me'avon. Right, he says that Arvus includes to save someone else from Aveira, which is a different application. But that seems to be what we're talking about here, that essentially he sees the Arvus as we all share this one big chiyuv, so therefore your need to do the mitzvah keeps me alive, keeps my chiyuv alive, and your possibility of doing an Aveira and my need to save you from it is all part and parcel of that whole story.
But if you want to connect it to the other part that writes about everyone sharing, isn't it probably more the pashtus then that there's a chiddush din with Arevus and only really the mitzvahs aseh? Maybe you have such a thing?
Maybe, but again, the Russian language is very significant.
Right, we have to save him because, and how do we do that? Through Arvus, because we have a chiddush of Arvus.
So
but
what's more,
said, not necessarily the same.
Right, what's more likely, I think, especially the way the Rush says it, is that, I have to look at it the other way, that Arvus is a reality, that we're all connected in a Klal Yisrael sense. The Gemara derives this from Sukkim and Chumash, that Davka, when we came into Eretz Yisrael, that happened. That before we came into the land, we were separate, but once we entered into the land of Israel, so we accepted Arvus for each other. Fascinating idea. And therefore, we're all interconnected. And what's more likely is, therefore, the din of Yatza Motzi, somebody who was already Yatza could still be Motzi somebody else, is an outgrowth of that. So that application to a mitzvah saseh is a result of this Arvus, and that's what the Rosh is saying, that in general, we're a raven for each other. And therefore, we have to matzal miyavon. And therefore, we also have this principle of Yatza Motzi, that our chiyuv is not viewed independently. Our relationship to mitzvos and averos is not viewed just each man for himself, but that the involvement of other Jews in that mitzvah is also a part. Hi.
So the end of the Rosh of that women aren't bichlal
Arabs. Yeah, you got to the controversial point.
Makes sense with many of our sparrows of saving them from Avon. They are just as high in Shabbos.
So, okay, so parenthetically, we are going to have to spill this over to tomorrow. I'm sorry. Again, it's important stuff. I'm sorry it's taking so long. But just very quickly address that point. The Rush was very controversial, as you can imagine. There's a lot written about the Rush. The Rush has a line there where he seems to say that women are not included in Arvus. There's a lot of literature about it, which I'll happily share if you want to see. But just very quickly, so... I'm sure he does. He actually does. But Rebbe Akiva Eiger, more famously before that, who was an ancestor of Rav Nosson Gestetner, he always refers to his great-great-grandfather, Rebbe Akiva Eiger, but he was well-known before that, in the Chidushim to Aruch Chaim, in the Shulchan Aruch, Rei Shayin Aleph, he argues in the Dagom Ravava. Dagom Ravava was the Noda Behuda, the author of the Noda Behuda. The Dagom Ravava says that Yatza Motzi is dependent on Arvus. It says, therefore, we have a problem that if a man goes to shul Friday night, if you assume, like the Magen Avraham, that he's Yotzei Kiddush through davening, so then he's got a problem when he wants to come home and make Kiddush for his wife, because his wife is also Chayiv in Kiddush. That's the Gemara over there in Brachas Chafim Beis. So how can he be Motzi his wife if he's not Chayiv anymore because he was Yotzei in Shul? So you'll say, what do you mean? Same thing with the Megill in the nursing home, Yotzei Motzi, the whole story. So says the Rush, says Dagom Ravava, according to the Rush, but you see, it doesn't apply to women, so it's not going to work for his wife. So there are many answers to this, many approaches, but Rebbe Akiva Eiger's approach is that the Rosh never meant to say that women are not bechlal arvus, that we don't have responsibility on behalf of women in the sense that we've been talking about. Of course we do. What the Rosh meant is that if you have a mitzvah that the person who you're trying to help is not mechuyiv in the same way, doesn't share the same ikar chiyuv, so then your arvus doesn't extend to them. Because the arvus means that I'm obligated, you're obligated, we're obligated together. So if you haven't done it yet, I'm obligated to help you. But if you're not really obligated, you're not really mechuyiv, so then I don't have an arvus towards you. So what the Rosh meant, because the Gemara there has a suffix about Berchas HaMazon, whether or not women were obligated in Berchas HaMazon or not. So the Rosh was saying, in that context, if you don't share the same ikar chiyuv, so then maybe Arvus would not extend to you. But, says Rebbe Akiva Eiger, when it comes to Kiddush, the whole Shiloh that was being dealt with, Kiddush, says the Gemara, Kiddush, Nashim Chayavas Tvar Torah, women are obligated in Kiddush in the same way as men are obligated. So therefore, Arvus applies fully. He says, anytime you share the same Chiyuv, then Arvus applies. He didn't mean to exclude women Bechlal, he meant in a mitzvah that they're not Chayavos in, so then there's no Arvus. The whole shir in itself has a lot to be said. But to give another example of that Svara, so the Rambam writes that the reason there's no Chazaras HaShatz for Ma'ariv is because Tfilas Arvus Rishos. So as Rav Shach explains, as the language the Rambam seems to indicate, that the whole point of Chazaras HaShatz, that we have the Chazan who davens once, and then he davens again. So why does he daven a second time? Because Lahotzi Esha'eno Baki, that he should be able to help people who don't know how to daven, so therefore Chazaras HaShatz is for that. So even though he davened once, he davens a second time to be Motzi them. So that only makes sense if the whole tefillah is a chiyuv. We share a chiyuv, so then I have to help you with your chiyuv. But if tefillas arvus is a reshus, the whole thing is voluntary anyway. So then the whole notion of arvus that's going to let him make a second shmoneh esrei on their behalf isn't going to kick in. The same kind of idea that arvus is dependent on an obligation. Okay, so then presumably it's all outgrowths of this yisod, that there is this principle of arvus, and therefore everything comes out of there. Okay, so with these principles, and again, this is going to have to spill over a few minutes into tomorrow, but we are going to give at least the Mara Komos or something new also. But how do we approach the famous issue in the sugya, which you've for sure seen by now, the major machlokas between the Rashba and the Beis Yosef, which is Paskin and Shulchan Aruch? Right, what's the case that's being dealt with there? What does the Rashba deal with in his tshuvas? The situation of the kidnapped daughter. And you have somebody who is told that his daughter was kidnapped among missionaries, among people who are looking to convert her out of Torah. So in order to make an attempt to save her, he's going to have to travel outside of the Tchum. And that's possibly a Nisr D'Oraisa, depending on what type of Tchum it is, or at least according to one view. So the Rashba thought that he doesn't have license to do this, because just to be mezakeh, to save the spiritual welfare of a different person, apparently even if it's his daughter, we don't say to this person, chatei kidei shetizakeh. And of course, notably, the Beis Yosef disagreed, and that's the way Paskins and Shulchan Aruch. Right? And also notably, in terms of some points we mentioned today, so what does the Shulchan Aruch go on to say? That he's not only allowed to do this, but it's clear from the language of the Shulchan Aruch that in this case, Oymrim Lo, meaning he's Mechuyev. And that if he's not willing, then we'll get, right, Beis Din is going to be kofahim. Beis Din will insist that he does it. And what's also very significant is, even though until now we've been talking about, let's say, Nisa D'Rabbanan, so the example of Tchumen sounds a little bit confusing what category it's meant to be seen as. Tchumen is either a D'Rabbanan or a D'Raisa, that's a lav, it's not a normal malacha. But what does the Mishnah Berurah comment on that psak of the Shulchan Aruch? That example is lav davka, basically. And even if we're talking about one of the lamatats malachas he's going to have to do in order to save her, so he would do a malacha in order to accomplish this. Hi.
Would there be a similar question of Yari Bal Yavar, her father, the man would say, kill you, or your daughter should do one cardinal sins?
I mean that he should be the one to take on the...
He has a sense of responsibility of his daughter.
So that's a fascinating question. Short answer, presumably not. Long answer, I guess we'll have to, if you want to bring it up again. It's interesting because Reb Chaim, it's a famous Reb Chaim where he talks to Hilchos Sodei Torah, where even as one person that he thought there's a difference between actively doing an Aveira or if somebody was going to use you as a tool for the Aveira, you can be passive, whether it's so clear the Harvey Avar even applies in that case. So certainly if it's somebody else's Aveira, so you're passive in this whole picture. But separately from that, it's a fascinating question. So longer than we can accommodate in this time, if you want to bring it up again tomorrow. Right, it connects. So if you want to bring it up again tomorrow, we'll deal with it then a little bit. So essentially, this machlokas, the Beis Yosef and the Rashba, where the Shulchan Aruch paskins, you know, very assertively that it's not only an option, but it's a chiyuv, and the Beis Din will impose it. And the Mishnah Berurah filling out the picture that don't say this is just because it's a lav or nisa d'rabbanan, but even if we're talking about a nisa d'oraisa, which definitely changes the calculus of our sugya, which is the assumption that there's a nisa d'rabbanan or some type of a weaker iser. But here, essentially, Shulchan Aruch is making it clear that even a full-blown chilul Shabbos is going to be allowed. So what exactly is the underlying logic of that approach? So God willing, we'll have to pick up with that tomorrow. Everyone, what time is the earliest time?